Lee versus Lee.
Good morning. May it please the court. Patricia Novotny on behalf of Hillary Nye. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. There's a lot going on in this case, and it's a lot of it's pretty messy. I'd like to focus on what I think of as the pillars of this grossly unequal distribution and maybe try to map a path to a sensible remedy here. I'd like to start first with what I'll call the spreadsheet problem, which is a calculation error. And in the briefs, it's described a couple of different ways, but essentially what it comes down to is that the court, in dividing what it characterized as community assets and liabilities, treated them very inconsistently.
If we agree that, for purposes of just a hypothetical, if we agreed that there was error in characterizing property, why would we have to address the arithmetic error? I mean, if it seems to me, and I guess this is jumping ahead, what you're asking for is that we vacate the orders and we remand, and that there also be an evidentiary hearing related to the information that was disclosed. So if there were problems with how property was characterized, you basically have to start from the beginning. So why would we need to address this issue?
I don't disagree with you. I think it's just a question of where do you get at this problem. I think partly I noted it because it lays out how sort of lacking in consistency the court's orders are. So it's a mistake. It's definitely a calculation error because she treats the assets inconsistently.
But if you have to recharacterize the property and start from the beginning, I think counsel would have the opportunity to fix
that. Yeah, yeah, I agree with you there. I don't disagree with you at all. And so if you'd rather, I'd be pleased to talk about the characterization errors. I think I'd like to make a stop, though, and note that among the many problems here is the court's failure to address the statutory factors. And as I was reviewing this, the one that jumped out at me most glaring and consequential is the court's failure to talk about the earning potentials of the two parties. It acknowledges that they both have, substantial skills, but it never addresses the fact that in Mr. Lee's last year of full-time employment, 2007, he made $2.2 million, whereas my client made $180,000. And that, as we know in the case law, in fact, I think Rockwell calls it a substantial factor in arriving at a just and equitable distribution. And it's just missing in action here. So, yes, that analysis needs to be performed before the court can.
Did the court provide any analysis of Mr. Lee's ongoing business? He had his consulting company. Was there any analysis of his income from that business?
Not that I recall. I don't recall any analysis by the court of the statutory factors whatsoever. There's an allusion at one point. The court acknowledges the debt that the parties have acquired and that their skill set, and that it wants to kind of leave them in roughly equal positions. But there's no analysis of the earning potential factor that our case law requires.
But there was an analysis of her law firm's income potential.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, the court absolutely did identify that as a fact that she had an ongoing law practice. But, it's not up to her to support Mr. Lee going forward, and I think there's no explanation whatsoever for why Mr. Lee can't go out and, make the kind of money he was before. And I think we see this is very much like the Rockwell case, in fact, in that set of facts, where Mr. Rockwell, lost a particular job or left a particular job and then wanted to be a math teacher. and et cetera, et cetera. And the court held him to the higher standards, said, look, you have the capacity to make this kind of money. That's what we're going to figure into the analysis. So so that's a big problem. The mischaracterization of the property is a big problem. And the main issue there is the Vashon lot, which simply lacks any the kind of evidence that we need that that's a separate property item. In fact, all the evidence goes in the other direction.
If the case were to be remanded, would it be necessary for the court to reopen for taking additional evidence, or can she just rely on what's been presented?
You know, that's a good question, and I, you know, in an ideal world, you'd like to have it all everything lined up perfectly, but it seems to me that I was thinking a lot about Norman Lear, where he says the two most important words are over and next, and maybe the sensible thing for the court to do is to go back where it was in March in terms of valuation, because there wasn't a lot of dispute about some of the valuation issues. I think the court could have as an option, if it wanted, the opening it up for supplemental evidence. The problem with what happened here post the bankruptcy filing is that, again, the evidentiary deficiencies in what Mr. Lee presented, you know, that we identified in the brief, but also the inconsistency in how the court treated it, taking those things at face value, not allowing, not doing the same to her post-trial submissions, but also not doing the vetting that we need to test the reliability of any of that evidence. So I think the court, if it felt like it needed additional evidence to set it to reach an outcome, should have that opportunity. I think, you know, as a practical matter, you know, I don't know that these parties need to go back and have a full-blown trial. I don't know. I think that's something the court's going to have to decide on the ground.
A minute ago, you said that all the evidence on the Vashon lot was in favor of it being community. What evidence was there that that's community property?
What evidence? It was purchased during the marriage, okay. And that is a creates a presumption that it's community property. The only evidence that Mr. Lee offered to the contrary, which he brought into trial at the right on the eve of trial, it wasn't disclosed as part of discovery, was a withdrawal slip from an account in his name at KeyBank. And he claimed that showed that this was a separate property and that was his separate property. But he also testified at RP 3637 that between that account and the joint Ameritrade account created in 2007, the same year that the property was purchased, funds transferred back and forth routinely. So there was absolutely no showing that the kind of tracing that we need. Harry Cross describes it as a chain. It links, you know, one link after another. You have to connect those up if you're going to rebut that presumption of community property. And what Mr. Lee brought in was a weak link at best. It simply isn't enough to satisfy that evidentiary requirement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Lee, respondent. The appellant has presented a case that essentially has three different prongs to it. One, that the court did not follow the proper steps to come up with an equitable and just outcome. Two, they've readdressed a series of events, presenting one side of the facts but not the other side of the facts, and asking this court to substitute its assessment of those facts for the trial court. And finally, an assertion of mathematical mistakes. I'd like to address those three, and I'll start with the mathematical mistakes. Contrary to what the appellant says, there were no mathematical mistakes in the presentation. The appellant actually acknowledges that in their reply brief, with one caveat where they say that there was an unfair treatment as to a portion of debt, saying that that debt should have been treated equivalently with the other items, as they assert that the debt was fully assigned to Ms. Nye. That was not the case. In the attachment, it's very clear in the Exhibit W, Item 18, that that debt is split 50-50.
I want to move you ahead a little bit, because I think if there is an error in how we allocate, the math's going to work out separately.
Okay.
So I'm going to come back to the Vashon lot, and I asked opposing counsel what evidence was there that that is separate property? And we start with a presumption since it was purchased during the marriage.
Right.
So what evidence?
Both sides presented their facts, the law and the facts. The facts were that there were separate accounts maintained until early 2010. There were 5 years of bank statements presented, 5 years of trust fund statements presented. Never until 2010 is there any commingling between those accounts and any accounts that were brought into the marriage by Ms. Nye or any other community accounts.
And what year was the Vashon lot purchased?
I'm sorry?
What year was the Vashon lot purchased?
2007. There was a bank withdrawal that showed the purchase of a cashier's check. The cashier's check was then deposited to the escrow amount, very discreet amount, $55,638.17. The escrow company only keeps records for 4 years and did not have a copy of the actual check itself. But there was clear linkage between the escrow payment and the withdrawal from the account. Again, an account which was clearly separate. This was about 2 months after the marriage. And again, there was no commingling of funds for approximately 3 years.
The deed was in both of your names, though, as joint
and the court took that into account. Again, there's substantial case law that says that that is not the governing factor. The governing factor is unless explicitly in writing, there is a transfer. The funds remain in the state that they were in at the beginning of the marriage. This is also a short-term marriage, which has significant distinctions. Appellant points to the marriage of Terry and says that the paramount issue in dividing assets is to take into account the post-dissolution economic position. The marriage of Terry was a case based on determining whether that marriage was a short-term marriage or a long-term marriage. The trial court had made a ruling that the marriage was defunct, although the marriage had existed for 20 years. The appellate court overruled that and said that this was, in fact, a long-term marriage. And in its clarification of how to apply it, it said rather than use the short-term marriage criteria of attempting to return people to their relative positions, use the long-term marriage criteria, and that little snippet is what's been presented in the brief of paramount concern is the post-dissolution impact of the parties.
Do you agree that the wedding ring was a gift before the marriage?
I do. I also agree that, as the appellate points out, that the court is certainly has the ability to place assets, whether they are separate or community, to allocate them in a different distinction than they did relative to that designation. In fact, the court did that in favor of Ms. Nye to the tune of $136,000. In the initial allocation of assets and liabilities, there were two family debts that I had incurred, totaling $136,000, that were initially placed as community debt. When the court made its final allocation, they moved those to a separate category, not assigning those to Ms. Nye. So the court actually did, in fact, make the distinction between what was community, what was separate, and then factored that into its allocation to reach a fair and equitable conclusion. That final step actually benefited Ms. Nye. It did not hurt Ms. Nye. And that's really the only issues that I have. There was some challenge that there was not a formal documentation of the process the court used to find that there was a fair allocation. The appellate cites the marriage of Stedman, which made that challenge. The court found that there was no such obligation to do it formally, so long as it was a part of the process, as it was here. So that really has no standing. That award was actually not overturned. The only thing that was overturned there was attorney's fees, which are not at issue in this case.
The appellant states that on the HELOC, the home equity loan on the Vashon property, that no money was taken out of that loan until after the marriage. Is that true?
That is true. It was taken out for the purpose of funding a trial that was designed to secure an asset which had been previously brought in by the appellant That's the court's ruling on that. So it was used to pay legal fees associated with.
Wasn't the testimony that some of it was also used to help start up the new law firm?
That's an assertion made in appellant's brief. That's not really the testimony. And again, the court reviewed all the testimony that occurred and did not come to that conclusion. Are there any other questions, clarifications?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd just like to make a couple of quick points. That this the problem here is the patent disparity that resulted from whatever process the court used. And as Rockwell said, citing P, that's an abuse of discretion. You know, the result here is that my client, with much less earning potential, is paying about twice her annual income to Mr. Lee, who's shown the ability to earn over $2 million a year. I have a problem with Mr. Lee's argument here insofar as my recollection is that many of the things he said are not in the record, particularly with respect to the Vashon lot. What was produced was this bank withdrawal slip. He testified himself, again, at RP 3637. I'm going to just quote, and again, this is in addition to all the evidence that these people did not maintain separate buckets. The HELOC is but one example. That the funds were transferred between the joint Ameritrade account founded in 2007, so not 2010, but, quote, in and out all the time. Another quote, transactions went back and forth between the two numerous times. It's simply not established on the record the kind of tracing that we require to overcome the presumption of community property. You know, and you think, too, about just the family involvement in that lot. You think about the improvements Ms. Nye made to the lot in terms of securing the lease as a community property interest, if nothing else, right there. So, and it's true, of course, characterization doesn't drive distribution. But here it seemed to, and that's another big question, is why did the court just ignore the separate property things? Not only why did it put them, some of them there, but they don't come out in the math. So, you know, again, we ask for a remand for the court to consider the best path to resolve some of these issues. If that includes taking new evidence, so be it, and it may well require that.
But would any new evidence be limited just to the late submission after trial, or should this case be retried?
That's a good question. it's difficult to try a case with a pro se litigant, and this is no criticism of Mr. Lee. He's obviously done a lot of homework. But I think a new trial properly conducted would actually get to a much better factual record and help the court. I think the court was at some disadvantage here in dealing with the factual issues. So a new trial would be, ideally.
Why would it be any different?
Well, that's what maybe if there were two attorneys.
Oh, that's your premise.
Yeah.
But without that premise, it wouldn't be any different.
Well, that's my fear. So now you've got my fear.
Wastes a lot of
precisely that was
money and time.
That's my concern. Yes, exactly. So as a practical matter, maybe going back to where they were at March and correcting for the many legal errors and the math, the other errors might be a sensible solution, if not, again, a perfect one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next.